Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced issues, etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Welcome back. It's Tuesday, March the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. 10 minutes with Douglas Johnson of National Right to Life on the subject of congressional attempts to defund Planned Parenthood. Then we'll talk about natural law and the family with Dr. Ryan McPherson. It's encouraging to see that many have examined recent legislation and have found that there are loopholes in the so-called no federal funding for abortion. There is, in fact, federal funding for abortion, and some new avenues of it have been emerging recently, especially with health care reform. So how can it be stopped? Can it be stopped? Douglas Johnson joins us. He's legislative director of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C., and a regular guest. Douglas, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Some might say this is a bit drastic. I mean, Planned Parenthood is the major provider of abortion nationwide, but they also do all sorts of other perhaps unrelated and good things. Is this too drastic to defund them?
We don't think so. Planned Parenthood is the flagship of the pro-abortion industry, if you will, in the United States. In 2009, they just released the figures. They performed more abortions than ever, 332,000, about one-fourth of all the abortions done in the U.S. And as we have documented in a series of articles in the National Right to Life News, the organization is aggressively seeking to expand its market share, if you will, on abortion. For example, they reliably reportedly have issued a mandate from the corporate headquarters that all of their affiliates, each of their affiliates, must begin to provide abortions within the next 2 years. And in fact, the Corpus Christi, Texas affiliate of Planned Parenthood has dropped out of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America because of that mandate. So they don't think that we have too many abortions. They think there aren't enough, and they are trying to aggressively expand their marketing, if you will, for abortion. This makes Planned Parenthood unlike other federally funded organizations. Planned Parenthood in the aggregate gets about a third of its funding from government sources, and a great deal of that is federal money. And whatever good things might be done with some of that money, we're sure there are many other entities out there that are willing to do those things that don't have this deep, deep investment in abortion and abortion advocacy.
You were recently on the Hill. What did you have to say there with regard to this subject?
Well, there are several important pro-life bills moving in the Congress, particularly in the House of Representatives, that would improve protections against federal funding of abortion, and I testified in support of one of these, and testified as well in sort of to give a perspective on how we got to where we are now. We have been fighting this issue now for more than 30 years, and we have kind of a patchwork, a wall that's been cobbled together from different pieces and stuck together with cement, but the holes keep getting knocked in it. This wall is supposed to prevent the waters of federal funding of abortion from coming through, but it requires constant maintenance. And what we'd like to see is a permanent federal law that would prohibit and prevent federal subsidies for abortion. And that has been introduced in a bill form by Congressman Chris Smith, the chairman of the Pro-Life Caucus. It's called the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, and it would establish a permanent government-wide policy against federal subsidies for abortion. This would make it much more difficult in the future to try to smuggle in new forms of federal funding of abortion, as we saw done, regrettably, with some success by President Obama during the last Congress. And now we're trying to go back and repair the damage done by the Obama health care law with respect to abortion policy and other things as well.
What was Executive Order 13535, and how do you evaluate it?
Well, this was towards the end of the debate over the health care legislation last year. in order to get the votes to pass that bill into law, the president went through a hollow political exercise. He signed an executive order that he said would prevent federal funds from being used to support abortion. We called it a political stunt. The president of Planned Parenthood called it a symbolic gesture. I think these are two different ways of saying the same thing. There really wasn't any substance to that executive order. The 1,000-page law itself has got a number of major new programs in it that will be expanding abortion and will provide an authorized provision of federal subsidies for abortion, unless we can go back and repeal it, replace it, repair it, which we're trying to do.
You mentioned this before, but the Guttmacher Institute's numbers and the way they're being interpreted by Planned Parenthood as tragic rather than an improvement. I mean, everyone's saying safe, legal, and rare, but it sounds as though every abortion that isn't performed seems to be one that Planned Parenthood would like to have seen to have been performed.
Well, and in fact, you know, there's a lot of data on what the effect of cutting off federal funding for abortion has been. What the pro-abortion people predicted in the 1970s would be that the policy, if adopted, would lead to a great increase in abortion-related deaths and injuries to women from illegal abortions, the bloodbath predictions, these were called. None of that happened at all. There's absolutely no evidence that there's been any increase in abortion-related morbidity and mortality. What has happened is a great increase in births, and the Guttmacher Institute has done study after study showing that this effect is real. They, however, describe it as a tragic result of the Hyde Amendment. We think it's a tremendous pro-life success story. By the most conservative estimates, by their studies, there are more than 1 million Americans alive today because of the Hyde Amendment, because of the cutoff of federal funding of abortion. It may well be a lot more than that. They think that's a tragic result. We think that is a great public policy, and we want to extend it. They want to erode it. They want to undermine it. We want to extend it to any new areas in which the federal government gets involved. And under the Obamacare law, of course, there's a whole bunch of new populations that would be brought into federally subsidized health care. But regrettably, we didn't succeed in getting the protections to prevent abortion from coming with it. And that's part of what we're trying to do now in the new Congress with increased pro-life support. We're going to be moving forward these bills that would do that. And of course, we do expect resistance from the president, and also we're going to have a real challenge in the Senate where the pro-life strength is less than in the House.
So where legislatively, in concrete legislative terms, do the attempts to defund Planned Parenthood, where do they stand right now, Doug?
The House has passed what we call the Pence Amendment. Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana sponsored it, and it would totally cut off federal funds to Planned Parenthood and to all the Planned Parenthood affiliates around the country, period. And that passed the House 240 to 185, a pretty good vote. Now, the Senate hasn't voted on it yet, and we think it's those people who agree with us. We're encouraging them to communicate with their senators about why this organization, which is unique in the degree of its involvement in abortion, the number of abortions it provides, and the fact that it's very active in lobbying for abortion and advocacy for abortion, in political activity on behalf of abortion. Any type of limitation abortion that might be proposed in any state legislature, you can expect Planned Parenthood to be at the head of the pack opposing it. This is a unique organization. They want to do those things with their private resources, which they have in abundance. We can't stop them, but we don't think the federal government should be subsidizing that to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars as they have been. People who agree with that, we hope they'll communicate that to the senators, because Planned Parenthood has tremendous resources, and they are bringing those to bear now on the Congress with TV ads, media entertainment celebrities on Capitol Hill, and all the rest of it.
Some might say, Doug, look, this may get this far, but it has no chance in the Senate, and of course, zero chance on the president's desk. Why even try?
Well, it's not. It's mixed up with a lot of other things. You see that under the federal system, the president ends up having to take a budget bill, a funding bill, all or nothing. And so under President Clinton, although he was very pro-abortion, there were a number of pro-life gains because in the end he couldn't always have his way. If he wanted to get the things he wanted, he also had to take some of the things that the Congress wanted. So really what this is going to boil down to is a test of wills between the pro-life forces in Congress and the president. And, of course, it's awfully important that members of Congress be hearing from their constituents because there are a lot of different issues at play in these funding bills, and we want them to be hearing from constituents who feel that this is one of the most important issues in play. In the end, the president is going to have to decide what's most important to him, but we think it's awfully important that the members of Congress be hearing from people what's important to them at the grassroots level.
Folks, you can stay informed on the issue of defunding Planned Parenthood. Go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, look for the link to National Right to Life. Douglas Johnson is Legislative Director for National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. Doug, thanks for your time, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about natural law and the family. This, I think, is where natural law is most in evidence. This is also where natural law is not only learned, but at first practiced. Within the cradle of the family, everyone emerges from this one way or the other. And it is in this natural institution, natural in the sense that this is how God has created the world and humanity to be. It is in this natural institution of parents and family that natural law finds its locus. It's the place where we first encounter it, where we first learn it, and from which all other exercises of natural law emerge, whether they be government or other authorities in society. This is not a new insight. It's one simply borrowed from a 16th century reformer, Martin Luther, and he drew it straight from Scripture itself. The family is the basis for society and as the cradle of natural law. We'll be talking natural law and the family with Dr. Ryan McPherson for the remainder of today's program. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Mondays, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend. issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for Teaching a Sunday School Lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The most racist industry in America.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Former Senator Rick Santorum was recently criticized for saying blacks should oppose abortion. It must be pointed out, however, that he is echoing sentiments expressed by pro-life black leaders. For instance, Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King, calls abortion the most racist industry in America. Walter Hoy, a black pastor who's gone to jail for peacefully counseling women against abortion, calls abortion a black genocide. He points out that because of abortion, the black fertility rate in America is below replacement level. Blacks in America will become an endangered species, says Pastor Hoy, if the trend continues.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.